And welcome. This is iScience, not Science as One. You may have confused the themes if you're a regular listener. So it's 5 p.m. and this is IC Radio. Today we have a really cool show lined up. First of all, we're going to chat about our new iScience magazine that just launched tomorrow. It's going to launch tomorrow. We're also going to chat about all things cold. It's Christmas. It's freezing. Let's talk about some cold climate ecology. So today we've got two people in the studio. We've got Mariana. Hello.
Hello.
And we have Charlotte.
Hey.
All right. On the panel for today we've got the Arctic, why it's warming more than anywhere else and what we know about the impacts, polar gigantism, and penguins and their mating habits, etc. But first, Harry, take it away with the news.
Thank you, Jackie. So, you might be talking about cold climates, but I'm going to be talking about ocean heating. Global heating is supercharging an increasingly dangerous climate mechanism in the Indian Ocean, known as the Indian Ocean Dipole. It's played a role in disasters this year, including flooding and landslides in East Africa, and thousands of miles away in Australia, a period of hot, dry weather causing bushfires. Scientists and humanitarian officials say this year's record dipole threatens to reappear more regularly and in more extreme forms as sea surface temperatures rise. And on that theme, presented at the ongoing UN climate talks in Madrid, a study undertaken by the International Union for Conservation of Nature says that climate change has caused the world's oceans to have lost around 2% of the oxygen on average over half a century, although in some areas it's been up to around 30%. And around 700 ocean sites are now suffering from low oxygen compared to 45 in the 1960s. The research predicts the oceans will lose 3 to 4% of their oxygen globally by the end of the century if carbon emissions continue to remain unchecked. And in more sad news, we're talking about the Samoa measles outbreak. An outbreak on the Pacific island has led to drastic government measures to fight off the deadly disease. They've declared a state of emergency and made vaccinations compulsory. The Samoan Ministry of Health declared the start of the measles outbreak on 16th of October, and since then there have been over 4,300 cases reported, including 63 deaths. They've had nearly 90% of eligible people who have now been vaccinated, though, and an anti-vax campaigner has been arrested, as part of it has been blamed on the spreading of false information claiming that vaccinations are dangerous.
Ah, a few heavy topics this week.
Always the positive one.
Oh, yes.
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, everyone. So on that note, let's go less to some less global warming and more frosty good times. So let's listen to Frost by Yao.
I've been thinking about the long term, and it's time we took a detour. Every time I see you leave in the mirror, I'm wondering what we're even here for. I wish I knew. Just me and you. Show me more than what's in front of my eyes. Thank you.
Was Frost by Yao or Year, maybe. Don't know how it's pronounced. So first up today, we're chatting about the iScience magazine launch.
Yay.
So we've got one of our editors of the magazine into chat. So Charlotte, tell us about the magazine. What's it all about?
Yeah, so we've got the iScience radio show that you're listening to now, and then we also have the iScience magazine, which is quite a big part of iScience. So we've been working on it all term. The theme for this time is energy, and people have tackled this theme from all sorts of angles. They've talked about the global energy mix, renewable energy. Yeah, like so where we get our energy from. Is it fossil fuels? Is it renewables?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, obviously that's quite an obvious bit, but a really important bit that a lot of people have looked at. We've got a piece on gravitational waves. We've got a piece on superfoods. We've got a piece on...
Superfoods?
Yeah. So superfoods are generally nowadays considered foods that are high in antioxidants. And the wonderful Josie Clarkson has written a piece analysing whether they're all they're cracked up to be, whether it's worth
the
investment.
How good are chia seeds, really?
You'll have to read the magazine to find out.
yeah, we'll find out. Find out tomorrow.
Yeah, so the launch is tomorrow. We have a stall in the Sherfield building right outside the senior common room. We're going to have a bake sale as well.
Ooh.
So you can come and pick up a free copy of the magazine from us and buy a cake. Yeah, the magazine is free. The cakes are not free.
What a dang deal.
But they won't be expensive either. and we're also going to be putting... copies of the magazine out in various bins around the South Kensington campus. By bins, I mean not like rubbish bins. not in the rubbish bins.
Straight to the bin.
As in containers specifically for the magazine. So there's one in the library. There's one in the Sherfield walkway. There's one in the business school. And there's another one somewhere.
scattered places throughout campus.
Yeah. And if you... don't manage to pick up a copy in person, you can check our website, which is www.iSciencemag.co.uk, and it'll be under the magazine tab from tomorrow.
Oh, so you can read the whole magazine online.
Read the whole magazine online.
Ooh, convenience.
Yeah.
But then you don't get to go to the bake sale.
Yeah. What are you making for the bake sale, Charlotte?
I'm going to make some brownies. That's my job tonight.
Delicious.
Like normal brownies or like brownies
chocolate.
With like... okay, well, that was... the name brownie implies chocolate.
And I saw that Ken is making snickerdoodles, which I just realized I don't actually know what they are.
It's quite an American thing, isn't it?
Mm,
Mariana, maybe you should explain.
I didn't realize they were, but it's just like, it's almost like a sugar cookie, but with cinnamon.
Oh, no, I know what they are. Real good. I've had them before.
Yeah.
They're delicious.
Mm. Got a wide variety of cakes and biscuits and brownies and all sorts that people are bringing tomorrow. So it's 10 till 1 in the Sherfield building.
I will be there, stress eating all of your cakes.
Oh, yeah. And also reading the magazine because it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And there's some really interesting articles in there, you guys. One particular author, Jackie Wakefield, is present. but After this, we will get all into Arctic, Antarctic stuff. But first, let's play another song. What Can I Do If the Fire Goes Out by Gang of Youths.
Thank you.
And that was What Can I Do If the Fire Goes Out by Gang of Youths. So, what can we do if the fire goes out? Hopefully it goes out because the Arctic is warming a bunch. Charlotte, you're here to tell us about this.
Well, we don't want the Arctic to be warming.
No.
This is a bad thing. So we all know that, I hope, that global warming is a thing. So global temperatures have been rising. The current aim is to keep the rising of temperatures below 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. But the Arctic is actually the region on Earth that's warming faster than anywhere else. So it's the Arctic on average has warmed by 1 degrees over the last decade.
Alone. 1 degree Celsius?
Yeah.
Woo. So it's already like...
It's warming faster than anywhere else.
So it's already gone over this like 1.5 degrees Celsius.
It's
thing.
Heading that way. Yeah. Well, so the 1.5 degrees Celsius goal is an average for global temperatures. So obviously there will be some hotter areas and some colder areas, but it's the overall balance that gets us to 1.5 degrees.
So why does the Arctic warm so much quicker?
It all basically comes down to the albedo effect. The albedo, yeah. That's to do with the reflection and absorption of heat. So as the Arctic warms, we get more snow and ice melt. This gets rid of the white covering of the land and leads darker areas. And darker areas absorb more heat because light colors reflect heat, dark colors absorb heat.
That makes sense because whenever I wear like a black t-shirt in the sun or something, I get real toasty quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so because we're losing this snow and ice melt, we're absorbing more heat. This heat in the surface then causes more snow and ice to melt. So it's basically a big feedback loop. And it's not helped by the fact that in the Arctic and the Antarctic, because of the shape of the Earth, the troposphere, which is an atmospheric layer, is thinner. So we need less heat to be trapped in the atmosphere in order to warm the surface itself, which again will increase the snow and ice melt. And it's just
which
it's
will lead to
just,
more dark patches.
Yep.
So it's just like
it's one big feedback.
The Arctic is in a really sunny, hot room wearing a black t-shirt.
Yeah. And that is not good.
It's a sweaty mess. Sweaty mess.
Ooh.
So then as the sea ice retreats as well, the solar heat that's absorbed by the oceans is not trapped underneath the ice anymore, and it can be more easily transferred into the atmosphere. So again, this adds to the feedback loop, and it's also going to mess with the patterns of ocean circulation. So, you know, we rely on the I can't remember what it's called.
Is it the Atlantic
Gulf Stream? Yeah, the Gulf Stream. That's the one. The Gulf Stream keeps us warmer than we otherwise would be at this latitude. Yeah.
Oh, in here
UK.
In the UK.
Yeah.
Ah, you were explaining this to me.
Yeah,
it's
the AMOC thing.
Yeah.
So pretty much like what will happen by, won't it make it warmer or will it make it colder?
Well, I'm no expert on this, but there are lots of factors that influence the ocean circulation, because it's to do with heat and it's to do with the salt content as well and the density of water.
Yeah.
But, sea level rise and you know, the retreating of Arctic ice basically just messes the whole system up. And there are other issues that mess with it as well.
Well, if it shifts the Gulf Stream, because the Gulf Stream is bringing warm air from the equator, like from the Caribbean across. So if it moves that, presumably it would get colder in the UK.
Yeah, but I think it's also like, so I was looking, I was going to talk on a previous show about this, but I don't think we got to it. But the Atlantic meridional overturning circulation... there's something about the salt content, so like with melting ice water it will actually make it go through like a tipping point and then make that ocean current cold. So it's a warm current at the moment, and it'll make it cold, which will mean the UK will be colder.
But that doesn't mean the global warming isn't real.
No, it will mean the UK will be colder everywhere. It's not global warming.
No, no, it's not. Yeah, it's a misnomer.
Exactly.
But yeah. Yeah, so basically we know all this about the Arctic and the fact that it's warming from lots of studies that happen in the Arctic, but there are some problems because basically some studies have looked at this. Most of the studies that happen in the Arctic, the sites of these studies are located within 50 kilometers of two major research sites, one in the USA and one in Sweden. So these areas are very like overrepresented in citations and publishing. And then lots of areas are very underrepresented. In, for example, the Canadian High Arctic and the Russian Arctic coastline, there's not many studies that go on there. And when studies do go on there, they're very underrepresented in citations.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen any climate change studies from northern Russia.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody even goes.
I mean, part of it is because they do have these big research stations in the two that I mentioned in the US and Sweden. So
So it's more convenient.
Yeah, it is like the place that people would go to carry out these studies. But what this means is we have a very biased view of what warming in the Arctic looks like. We only know what it's like in these areas. And it turns out they're actually colder and therefore more rapidly warming areas in the Arctic are very underrepresented. So the situation might be a lot worse than we actually think it is.
Oh, that's not good.
Someone go to Russia. I'll go.
And it means that because we have this idea of the Arctic, the situation in the Arctic from these few sites. So we base all our mitigation efforts and prediction efforts about the effects of climate change in the Arctic on these sites. We might be getting it wrong because we know that they're not representative of the entire Arctic region. It's a massive region in lots of different countries. So yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So pretty much it's just like, so they've only got two areas that they're really studying.
Basically, yeah. Obviously, other areas are being studied, but the vast majority of Arctic research happens very near to these two big research stations.
That's so weird, because I don't think that's the case in Antarctica.
I feel like there is quite a bit, but it is... I had a researcher that I worked for who did a lot of, whale surveys down in the Antarctic, and it's a trek to get out there, so it really isn't that convenient, and you have to get so much funding, because they fly down to the most southern part of Chile and then take a boat from there, because you can't really, like, fly to Antarctica.
You can fly.
Oh, well, never airports? Mind.
Yeah, there's an airport.
Oh, cool.
I take that back. You can fly. But I mean, it's still
like...
But the
boat is probably cheaper, maybe?
I don't know. And regardless, it's such a harsh environment to be in. I mean, it's, you don't have societies out there. I don't know. It's so isolated.
I think you're stuck there for like a reasonable amount of time. Like you can't leave. Mm-hmm. Like you
can't pop on over for a week. Mm-mm. Like it is a long time.
Yeah, you're there
study.
Like with your research group for months at a time.
better get along.
Oh yeah. Okay, so I'm not sure if this I'll say it. Apparently the Antarctic Research Station is like meant to be the horniest place on earth.
Oh, I can imagine. Are you kidding me? It's either that or drinking.
Exactly.
Must get really awkward because you have to bump into those people.
Well, you're living with them. Or maybe it's normalized. Maybe they're just like comfortable with it. They're like, we're all gonna level chill. We're all gonna get to know each other real well at some point.
You have to just accept it.
Yeah, I reckon. But I think in Antarctica they've at least divided it by like there's like eight countries that have like an area, and then they've each got a research station like in different spots. Mm-hmm. So it's at least somewhat like more balanced, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I didn't realize. I'm surprised because the Arctic is so much closer to like Russia and Europe and such that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, no, there's like so much. I don't know. There's so much research going on in Europe and America and things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You think there'd be more going on in the Arctic than the Antarctic? Oh, that was my water bottle.
There we go.
But anyway, speaking of the Arctic, let's play a song by the Arctic Monkeys, A Certain Kind of Romance.
I like that link.
Keep rolling.
Romance by the Arctic Monkeys. So, Mariana, speaking of monkeys and animals, not really monkeys.
Well, no.
Let's just go, let's say animals.
Speaking excellent of animals. Excellent transition,
speaking
Jackie.
Of animals, you're going to talk about some really big ones.
Oh, yeah.
Megafauna. So,
we are talking about, and by we I mean me, polar gigantism.
Ooh.
So for those of you who don't know what gigantism is, it's this concept of animals that grow really large. I don't know if it's just animals.
Yeah.
Well, it's real simplified. I don't know if it's just limited to animals or it's also plants, but regardless. Some of you may have noticed there's a trend in very large animals, or oceanic animals, at least, in some of the colder areas of the world. I'll give you a couple examples. Classic, the giant squid.
I love giant squid.
Oh, they taste phenomenal.
I didn't know that they were polar animals.
That's a big calamari.
Oh, wow. You got the wrong audience.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. Anyway, they're distributed near the South Pole. And recent estimates state that they grow up to 13 meters.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
and they're also
big.
Quite deep in the water as well.
Yeah,
so it's like,
yeah.
Not only are they like in the Southern Ocean where it's already bloody
cold. Yeah.
Also deep down there.
It's true. And even, I think a lot of the large animals that people are familiar with in the ocean are in deeper waters. Mm. And it's real cold down there, too. I don't have a temperature off the top of my head. But 4 degrees, says Rena.
Chili.
That sounds about right.
Yep.
I don't know. Let's roll with that. Anyway, so the giant squid is an example. Basking sharks, they're the second largest fish, and they live in the North Pole, and they're known to grow to over 12 meters and weigh 19 tons.
Well, that's a big boy.
Yeah. Big boy indeed. They're really funny looking, too, if you haven't seen.
I'm going to look them up.
Basking shark. Question?
Yes,
what is the largest fish? Is that the
whale
second
shark.
Largest?
It's, and they live that, on the equator, so
yeah,
kind of
yeah. We're not talking about that.
The theory.
Too hot.
Yeah, yeah. Whoa, they are weird looking.
Yeah,
I'm gonna Google the basking shark. It's got
do it
a bloody vacuum mouth. It's amazing.
If you look, you can see the like the rib cage looking thing.
Oh my god,
it's, yeah,
it's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Weird.
That's
weird,
what I imagine them sounding like.
Cute. Yeah. Just swimming in my cold water.
Eating the crap. Okay, we're gonna stop.
So let's
move
on,
from imitating.
Yeah. So those are some of the more known examples, but I have two more here of amphipods. Have you ever seen one of those deep sea episodes of Blue Planet or something? Mm-hmm. They're the they look like roly-polies.
Roly-poly?
I don't know. What's the actual... It's that insect that rolls up into a little ball.
Oh, I don't know about...
Pill bugs.
Okay.
Pill bugs, yeah. Well, anyway.
We can all visualize it.
What's a pill bug?
It's those American ones that you thing. Pick up and they, like, curl into a ball.
Like, I know what you're talking about, but I think it's American.
People have been talking about this before. I've been in a conversation and they've been talking about, oh, yeah, that bug, and you pick it up and you touch it or something.
It's like, zoop!
And I've never... I don't know what this is, but apparently it's a thing that everyone knows about.
Google is
nothing to Google.
Tool. We used to play with them on the playground.
Like a woodlouse or something.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway,
moving on. It's the same family as the woodlouse or lice. But anyway, so amphipods in warm water will usually grow up to 1 centimeter, but in cold, deep water, they can be larger than a human hand. And I think they can even be larger than that. I think this fact might be wrong. But
I like that.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Like a big old bug.
And sea spiders, those are often seen in a lot of those
spiders.
Like sped up shots of those like deep sea feeding grounds when you have like a dead whale that falls down and all the animals come. Yeah. So sea spiders in Britain, like off the coast of Britain, they're only like 20 millimeters wide in terms of their like leg spans. But deep ocean or up in Antarctica or this, well... The Arctic is in the north. Anyway, there's a species there that have leg spans of 750 millimeters. So that's like, what, more than 5 times? I can't do math.
No, it's like, oh my like, God, I can't do math either.
Seven? No?
No, it's like 20 times.
I'm not even
going to attempt. It's like 20 times.
Yeah, it's an absurd number.
Like 20 times? No, it's like 40 times.
What's interesting about sea spiders, though, is that their bodies are so small in relation to the rest of them that some of their internal organs are spread into their legs.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine having your stomach and your arm?
It's like an extreme underwater daddy long legs.
Yeah.
Real creepy looking.
Such a weird body
of your lung.
Plan.
Like, I know.
Why would that evolve?
That is something I should have looked
up. Octopus's brain is like all throughout their body.
Really?
Yeah, like their brain is distributed everywhere.
I thought they had like a heart in each arm, or maybe that's a star.
I don't know if that's octopus, but octopi definitely do have like their brain is their whole body.
Ooh, which is
because they just have like neural networks instead of like an actual brain, don't they? I think something like that.
Apparently, two of their legs are also genitals, according to Raina. Thanks, Raina.
Just heard that in my ear. Also, two of their legs are genitals.
Two.
Like, oh. Two.
You need more than one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to steer us back on some.
Oh, yes, please. Yes, please.
Anyway, so that was a very long, convoluted set of examples. But essentially, the rule of thumb is that, I don't know, you learn this in ecology or... biology. And it mainly goes with land mammals, but body mass is supposed to increase as you get closer to the pole. So either the north or the south pole, if you're moving away from the equator, body mass increases. And so, for example, an average weight of an adult male white-tailed deer in Florida is about 57 kilos, but farther up north, closer to the North Pole in Montana, they can range from 114 to 125 kilos.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is a trend that scientists have seen quite some time.
Yeah.
And
how do you explain megafauna in, like, Africa then? Like, lions and elephants and...
I don't think it's necessarily like an all-inclusive rule, but it's something that
it's a general pattern.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
snap.
They've seen it with I had a fact written down here. I think it's called Bergman's Principle or Bergman's Rule.
Yeah, Bergman's Rule. I've heard of it.
Did I delete it? I guess I did. But yeah, it is.
I've heard of it in terms of like human populations as well. So like indigenous peoples in like higher latitudes, like near the Arctic.
Is that why people from Norway are so tall?
I don't know, but I'm not sure. Maybe. But yeah, compared to like indigenous peoples in like along the equator, they tend to be taller and thinner. And then people from like further north, or I guess further south as well, probably, they tend to be shorter and like stockier.
So that's like almost the opposite of the Bergman principle, I guess. No, it is.
It's
in line.
No, but in this one, it says that as you move further away from the equator,
closer
to the poles, they're bigger.
Yeah, so that's what. As in not taller, but like bigger, like.
Stockier.
Body mass, I think.
Yeah. So there are a lot of different reasons for this. Also, I was going to say, so it mainly applies to terrestrial animals, but they've recently found that. It also applies to cetaceans, which are like toothed whales, so dolphins, porpoises, as well as pinnipeds, which are seals and sea lions. So is it
only these two animals, or is it just because marine research tends to be a bit behind, like they haven't studied quite as many?
Yeah, it's more so that they've only just started looking at it in marine animals and life, but... Yeah, that's kind of where they've seen it now. I think they tried doing it with crustaceans and it didn't really work out. But to be fair, I only looked at one study, so I will acknowledge that. But I found a number of different reasons for why this could be. One article suggested that, well, this is Bergman's rule, actually, is that larger animals have a smaller area to volume ratio, which helps reduce heat loss. So that's that. Yeah. Don't know how else to expand on that, but
like the larger you are, the more you retain heat.
Exactly, yeah, because if you have less surface area to volume, then you have less of
A
surface to excrete, release heat, you know, diffuse. There we go. Thank you, Rita. Diffuse heat. So that's one reason. In terms of just like marine life in particular and fish, they say that it could have to do with cold water having more oxygen than warm water, and also animals in cold water for some reason need less oxygen. So they say that ice cold water at like 0 degrees Celsius, its solubility is about like 15 milligrams per liter, which is just basically an idea of how much oxygen or whatever can dissolve into a liquid is its solubility. Whereas at 30 degrees Celsius, it's only 8 milligrams per liter. So ice cold water can hold twice as much oxygen. Also, cold water is more viscous, so it's thicker than warm water, which makes it harder to pump across gills, which is how a lot of fish breathe, as we know.
Yeah.
And larger animals don't really suffer as much from that, so they can pump the water across their gills more easily than like a smaller little guppy could.
Just like bigger muscles.
Yeah, I tried to look up exactly why that was, but I couldn't really find anything specifically. So I think it just has to do with like more, like not torque. What am I thinking? Not horsepower. So like, I don't know, a measure of
however force. Strong they are.
Strong. Got some strong gills.
Oh, yeah, that's the first thing I think of when I look at a fish.
Yeah,
the gills. Are they strong? Yeah. Those are some strong.
There's weak gills there.
Can't be
fragile gills.
Oh no, can't go in cold water.
Yeah, and the last reason I found was that just simply the bigger you are, the more fat you can store. So that's like if you're a bear. And you're larger, you're going to be able to hibernate more successfully or for longer, I suppose.
More blubber.
If you're a little more chunkier, you know? So that is kind of where I'm going with my Christmas holiday eating strategy is that I'm hoping that I'll come back to England a little bit warmer because it is cold, man.
I am not
used to this.
Yeah. Also, shameless promo, but in the iScience magazine, we do actually have an article by Lydia Melville on hibernation.
How exciting.
So make sure we all pick that up and read that.
So pick up your free copy.
And then we can get tips for when we have Christmas and eat heaps.
Yeah. How to eat. Like
how to eat a lot and hibernate.
That's an article in itself.
God, I wish we hibernated.
Just waiting to happen.
God, I wish we hibernated.
Yeah, but then you'd miss out on all the fun holiday things like candy canes and.
Just do it in summer. Like in Australia, Christmas is in summer.
Oh, I was about to say, I'm not going to have a candy cane in summer. But then I was like, oh, shit, you probably...
That's my life.
Yeah, watch used it. Used to be at word over the,
the airwaves.
Oops. Well, sorry to all four of our listeners.
Wow. That's such a self-drag.
Don't expose us like that.
No. I'm sure it's much more than that.
I'm sure it's at least five.
I'm really just trying to make myself feel better for really dragging myself.
Well, on that note, let's go to another song. This is Please. Snow in brackets, Hey-O, by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
To decide that the things that I tried were in my life just to get high on. When I sit alone, come get a little known, but I need more than myself this time. Step from the road to the sea to the sky, and I do believe that we rely on. When I lay it on, come get to play it on, all my life to sacrifice. Hey, yo, listen what I say.
Cover of another perfect wonder where it's
right, that was Snow, Heyo, in brackets, by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I didn't realize I knew that song, but it turns out I do. So
everybody knows that
song. Yeah, I know, but I don't know anything by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You probably what? Do, Australia. You just don't know you do.
Like, what? Australian music and, like, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think... Before you, she's already giving me a face.
Go on.
I feel like they have a really similar. I feel like they have a really similar vibe.
Yeah, so why would I bother with the Red Hot Chili Peppers when I can get the same thing back home, you know?
But although that is a good song. That's a fun song.
Thank you.
I don't not like them.
It's called Snow, so it's topical.
It's very topical. I've just never come across them that much before.
Mm.
But
you should. You'd like them.
Yeah, I think you probably know a lot of their songs, but you just don't know it by then. Yeah.
I reckon, because like that one, like I know it and I don't know why. But anyways, let's get back on topic. So I wanted to end with something kind of fun. The Christmas season is known for being a little bit frisky as well. Frisky
really?
Is it?
Well, I don't know. Like, everyone has time off? And it's cold, and you got to share body heat somehow.
Exactly. Thank you. So
don't they call it cuffing season, right?
Yeah.
When winter cuffing. Comes around? Cuffing season.
Oh, please tell me what that means.
Oh, well,
it's
I mean,
everyone's coupling up in time for Christmas.
I don't know why they use cuffing. Why maybe it's like cuffing? Handcuffs.
I don't know. Maybe.
That's what I was thinking, and I was like, oh, God, please tell me it's not that.
Yeah, no, that's...
Anyway, so let's talk about mating, but with penguins. Oh, how about that?
Okay.
So it'll be cute. So I thought we could kind of compare it to maybe some mating rituals that humans have as well.
Oh, I'm excited for this.
So first, I've got the Adelie penguin, which is one of my favorites. They're really cute. So the male performs a display by stretching his head and neck up while pointing his bill vertically. He then flaps his outstretched wings while making a call that resembles the loud mutual display. Don't know what the loud mutual display is. I assume it's kind of like this or something, but like they both do it together. Here we go. It's the loud mutual displays where the Adelie raises and waves its head from side to side, plus the several syllable call. That they do. So it's like a
sounds exactly like my last Tinder date.
You just rock up and the guy's like
and then it's mutual, so you join it.
Yeah,
oh, it is mutual. Oh yeah. No,
it was it was very one-sided.
It's one-sided, right.
Okay, well maybe you'll meet someone you like and you can mutually do the call.
I think that's actually how I'm gonna figure out who it is I end up with, is we're just gonna see each other and at first sight we're just gonna scream and flail our arms.
Please do.
Yeah, it's gonna be amazing.
Please do. I feel like that would resemble some of my dance moves, to be fair. Watch out, men. Next, for a bit more of a sweeter one, so the emperor penguins
are known for
being monogamous. So they begin courtship in March or April.
Wait, you mean that the Adelie penguins aren't monogamous after such a loud mutual display?
If everyone's doing that to everyone else in the colony as well,
it's very confusing. It's like, what? Well, you could hear one male doing the call and there could be two females there and it's just confusing.
And they're both going to do it back.
I know. Well, then,
that would lock me up for life. I don't know, man. Like, if somebody's screaming at me, I'd be too scared to leave.
Not just screaming, also pointing their head upwards and flapping their wings.
Yeah. True.
Maybe that's how you choose your mate. You think who's doing the best? What is it? Mutual loud mutual call.
That has
it's like
to be
the Bachelor or something. But that's what they have to do.
Well, surely
a new reality
refuse.
Show idea.
Yes.
Loud mutual calling. You put two people in the room and they do this and see who vibes. You know.
Yeah. It is, after all, the best way to tell.
Of course.
I really figure out chemistry. Anyway.
So, the emperor penguins begin courtship in March and April, and they're serially monogamous, typically only taking one mate per year. Pretty good. And the female lays one egg in May or June, so they really have, like, a bit of time to get to know each other, these penguins.
Aww. Very romantic.
The female transfers the egg to the male, so he does his fair share, and returns to the sea to feed while the male incubates the egg in his brood pouch for about 65 days.
Wow. This is the classic, like, penguin mating thing that people hear about, right?
Yeah, well, it's a classic co-parenting.
Yeah, I feel like maybe humans should learn something.
Yeah.
This was, like,
about
a March of the Penguins.
The equality.
Yeah, it was it's also in Happy Feet.
Yeah.
It is also in Planet Earth. They definitely have everywhere. A sea
yeah, they do. Yeah. It's a popular thing. It's
the emperors are the classic penguins.
Mm. Well, after the chick hatches, the male continues to work, and he sets the chick on his feet and covers it with his pouch, feeding it a white milky substance produced by a gland in his esophagus.
Sorry, that's just...
Do you really not like the sound of a milky white substance produced by the esophagus of a male penguin?
Wow, I mean, you couldn't pay me enough money.
Sorry, that's fair enough, I think. So when the female returns from feeding, the male goes and has his turn feeding, and the female pretty much chucks up all her fish food for little baby.
Yum.
Regurgitation, am I right?
How much would we have to pay you to eat that?
Well, I'm just happy
that
it's not...
I'm poor, so I'd take anything.
It's not the female who's having to eat this milky white substance. It's just the little chickie.
The child.
Mm. So then you can kind of forget it as you go.
But the males and females would do that for each other if one of them's hungry.
Would they?
Yeah.
And they say romance is dead.
I know, right? Wow. I know. Oh, so next, I've got the chinstrap penguin, where the males bring stones to the females and they make a little rock nest.
Oh my gosh.
It's weird, isn't it? How, like, in nature, animals often call each other by giving them gifts. And then, like, in human society, you know, you give someone a ring when you're asking.
Which is a rock.
Asking them to, yeah, to marry you with a rock.
Excellent.
So we
parallel.
Are chin straps, pretty yeah. much. Men can have
chin strap beards,
which are gross, but.
Not everybody
thinks it's a choice.
Somebody likes it.
God, I wish someone would give me a rock. I mean, a stone.
Just a normal rock.
Just a rock. God, I want some rocks.
But is it one or are there multiple?
No, they give them heaps of rocks. Like, they build their whole nest out of rocks.
That's exhausting.
Or rocks.
Like, these penguins are small, too. Like, the chin straps are one of the
smallest species.
They can
carry, like, one rock at a time.
Oh my gosh.
Like up and down, carrying their rocks. It's intense.
That's like a dude like carrying boulders and just like
just one at a time. Yeah, and just like puts it outside your house, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm so excited to build my birthing chamber.
But it's like you're building the house out of the rocks that he leaves you outside.
Yeah.
So
it's sweet. It'd be like in a way like building a house together. It's kind of nice. I don't know. That's one of my favorite ones. But it looks like we're kind of running low on time, so I don't think I'm going to be able to get to all of the other mating rituals, unfortunately. But don't tune in next week. I was going to say tune in next week. Do not tune in next week. We are not on. We are on Christmas break. Tune in January 6th for our new year in iScience, where I think that we'll be doing an alcohol episode.
What?
So that'll be fun because it'll be like January. But anyways, here is a Christmassy song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire.
Yay.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase kids from 1 to 92.
Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. From 1 to 92, although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.